Here's the thing. Ever wonder why aspiring authors spend so much time trying to crack the code about how to get published? That's because no one who's in the daily grind like me has put all the pieces together in one place. It's Carly Waters here, and as your senior literary agent on the podcast with 15 years of experience in publishing, selling books, and teaching the business of publishing, I'm here to give you the clarity that will turn this hobby into a career. Inside my course, The Author's Publishing Playbook, we have monthly live Q&A sessions to cover your specific issues. But for the rest, there are over 40 video lessons that equal 10 hours of learning with professionally edited transcripts. The course will solve all your writerly problems, except write your book for you. That's on you. My course is a masterclass designed to teach writers how to prepare, pitch, publish, and promote their book in today's competitive publishing landscape. It's for career-driven writers, aspiring and published, who want to understand how to succeed in the business of books. There are over 20 worksheets, downloads, and plug-and-play templates for editing, querying, and marketing. You get lifetime access for the entire 6-module course as soon as you purchase. As new content gets added, you have access to that as well. Don't forget, there's a mobile app on top of computer access you can learn on the go. Get started today to gain the career you've only dreamed about. And you guys get a discount. So at checkout, carlywaters.com/course, use code POD15. That's code POD15 when you check out for 15% off. That's carlywaters.com/course. Use code POD15. That's code POD15 when you check out for 15% off. See you inside the course.
Hi everyone, this is Cece. If you're a fan of books with hooks, then you've probably heard me use the term interiority. I often catch myself saying things like, these pages need more interiority, or the interiority here needs work. And that's because interiority is a super important element of storytelling. It's what makes books unique. But as it turns out, a lot of you have questions about what exactly is interiority and how to properly weave it into stories, which is why I'm teaching my popular Writing Interiority class in a new 2-day format. We'll meet on Thursday, June 6th at 8 p.m. via Zoom to cover all things interiority, including the difference between interiority and emotions, how interiority is different from telling, how to leverage interiority into plot points, how to strike a balance between interiority and mystery, and more. And then we'll meet again for a live cozy Q&A session on Monday, June 10th, also at 8 p.m. via Zoom, in which you'll have the opportunity to turn your camera on if you choose. If you're interested, check out the link in my bio on Instagram, and I hope to see you there.
Hi there, and welcome to my show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm your host, Bianca Murray. Today's guest is the internationally best-selling author of the 10 Tiny Breaths series and the Burying Water series, as well as the novels He Will Be My Ruin, Until It Fades, Keep Her Safe, The Simple Wild, Be the Girl, and Say You Still Love Me. Her books have been featured in national publications including USA Today, Globe and Mail, Suspense Magazine, Publishers Weekly, Oprah Mag, and First for Woman. She has been nominated for the Goodreads Choice Award for Best Romance 2013 for 10 Tiny Breaths and Best Romance 2018 for The Simple Wild. Keep Her Safe made Suspense Magazine's Best of 2018 list for Romantic Suspense. It's my pleasure to welcome K.A. Tucker. Kathleen, it's so wonderful to have you as a guest on my show today. Thank you for joining us. I was thinking back to when you and I met, and it feels like forever ago, but it was only January.
This year, right?
Right. This year, it feels like eons ago. And this was pre-COVID when people could still get together in restaurants. And we got together in Toronto, a whole bunch of women writers, Canadian women writers, getting together to support each other and meet each other and network. And I was lucky enough to sit next to Kathleen, but I had no idea who Kathleen was. And one of the authors to my side asked her name, and Kathleen introduced herself, and she started fangirling hard. And then I was like, oh shit, I'm sitting next to someone super important and I've been acting like quite a dweeb. And then Kathleen and I started chatting on social media. And since then, I've read Kathleen's books. It's wonderful now to be able to say that I am fangirling hard too. So Kathleen, what I'd like to chat to you about today is your switch between genres, because you have published a lot of books and you have done romance, you've done suspense. I think you've done like a bit of YA fantasy, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I started with, actually. Yeah.
Right. So I kind of want to look at that progression and why you changed and why you ended up where you did. And I'd also like to chat about self-publishing, because something that we told as authors when we're setting out is how difficult it is to self-publish and how difficult it is to make it as a self-published author, which is why I think so many of us tend to just go for traditional publishers and hope like crazy that we get a publisher behind us. And you've been traditionally published and you have self-published. So you've seen both sides of the equation. And I feel like you could really give us the pros and cons of each. So let's start with the progression in terms of genre. You started with YA fantasy.
Sure. Yeah. So, and thanks, by the way, for having me today. It's kind of fun to do this. I'm so happy to see you again after whatever 10 months, I guess it is now, but it feels like 11 million months. So I started writing. It was completely for myself, which I mean, I think probably most people do, but it wasn't, I had no plans to publish at all. I was on maternity leave and I had two little girls at home. You know, I'm Canadian. So as you know, we have year long maternity leaves and that's a long stretch. And it's a wonderful thing, but it can be a long thing. And especially when you have some tough babies, which I did. And so for me, writing just became an escape. It was just something I had an idea. And I just had this, you know, YA fantasy mishmash, vampires, paranormal, I don't even know what you call it. And I just went with it. And I started writing and writing and writing. And then all of a sudden, I realized that this was a real passion of mine. And it's something that I wanted to pursue still as a hobby, because I had a full career in sales that I'd worked very, very hard for. And I mean, you know, the story that you can't really get anywhere in publishing and how difficult it is, and you'll be the poor writer. And I don't want to be the poor writer. So, but it was something that I just felt I needed to do. And so at that point, I started researching traditional publishing as well as self-publishing, because at that time, self-publishing was really starting to take off. So before that, I mean, people were self-publishing.
What year was this? Because I think at that point, they were still considering it like vanity publishing.
So there was a stigma still at this point. It was 2000. I guess I started doing the research in, I want to say 2010. And so I started doing some research and yeah, so there was still the stigma, but Amazon was coming on board. In a big way, you know, the opportunities to self-publish were growing. Bloggers were becoming very, very important. The online presence was becoming very important around that time. It was just starting, I should say. And so through research, obviously, I mean, I think I sent a couple queries out to agents, didn't get a bite back, that thought, whatever, well, I love this story. I want someone to read it. Why don't I just self-publish? And so that's when I started going down that path and I started doing research on editors and et cetera, and cover artists and everything, just how to publish. And so I self-published that first book and it was at the right time. So the market was not saturated and I was able to get some traction with bloggers. And then I published the next one. And then right around that time, that was 2012, everything was really taking off. Romance was really taking off. Self-publishing was really taking off. Sorry, when I say romance was taking off, obviously romance has always been huge, but indie publishing romance was really taking off.
There was quite a lot of fan fiction at that point, wasn't there?
Yes.
You know, based on Twilight, on all other books, a lot of people writing fan fiction.
Yeah, a lot of people. I think there were a lot of people around that time. Stephanie Meyer was actually, she sparked a lot of ambition in people. And they were saying, you know, they heard her story and they thought, well, she can do it, I can do it. So there were a lot of people like that. And I had an idea. And that's a lot of the time when we talk about me jumping genres, it's because I have an idea. And my ideas don't necessarily fit in one bucket, right? I'm not just like, oh, and I know I'm probably a marketing person's worst nightmare, especially in publishing, but I don't really fit into, you know, I have to go with my gut. So at that point, I had this idea for 10 Tiny Breaths. And I thought, oh, I've got to write this story. And I was the fastest I've ever written a story and I got it out. And the funny thing is I always think about if I had published that book 6 months earlier, I might've had a different career. 6 months later, I might've had a different career. And just in the types of offers that friends were getting, and then 6 months later in the types of offers people were getting. And so I hit right at the right time. I think it was a lot of luck there. And I self-published that book and it took off. And frankly, it was my first romance that I've ever written, and I loved writing that. And so I've gone from writing just YA fantasy to realizing how much I love romance. And I mean, I've always loved romance and everything, even the books I read, you know, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, even the darkest fantasy type male dom written books, there's still that spark of romance that I need. So that's not, I guess, overly surprising, but contemporary romance I loved. So, and then from there, I mean, I signed with my agent and I signed with my my publisher.
Was that based on the success of the self-publishing?
Yep. So that was, again, it was right at that time when publishers, specifically the one that signed me, they were actively out there looking to see what was hot in the market, what was doing well. They were kind of combing through what was popular, I guess, at that point. And that's when they picked up my book and they read it. And an editor contacted me right after, I remember January 2nd, right after the publishing, everything opened up again, right? Because they shut down between Christmas and New Year's. And so it just kind of went really fast from there. And at that point, I had to make a decision of, am I doing this, or am I going to continue doing this as a small hobby and continue with my life and my career and everything, because I can't do it all. So, I mean, it was a no-brainer. I'm like, see ya. and so then I signed on with my publisher, and I signed quite a few contracts with them. I think I was probably 4 or 5 contracts with them. They were just revolving, you know, one after another with 4 books, and, you know, another 4 books, and then a couple more books. And when I signed those, when I signed the contracts, they were based on ideas. And sometimes they weren't even based on ideas. They were like, here's one idea, and here's a 200 word description, say for Burying Water. It's going to be a girl found near dead in the woods in the winter. And that's kind of basically all I had for the pitch of that story. And then 3 other books in that world, and that was it. So I did that for quite a bit. And then I was kind of all over the place. I wrote romance, and then I wrote a contemporary romance. And then I wrote 4 books of romantic suspense, because that's where I was kind of edging more into, just naturally, just those darker storylines. But to be frank, they don't sell as well as contemporary romance. And then unless you're like a J.D. Robb or, you know, or Sandra Brown or something like that, someone like that. And then, yeah, and then I guess I just bounced around a bit. I wrote He Will Be My Ruin, which is because it was just like as dark and thrillery, and I wanted to write murder for whatever reason at that point. And then I went to, I think, Until It Fades, which was like a Cinderella-esque story, which was like a palate cleanser. So when I say I'm definitely probably someone's nightmare for marketing, I'm not exaggerating.
And just on that, like, do you find that your readers will read anything you write, or do you find that you have readers that are very specifically the one or the other, and they kind of read the blurb to see which one it is before they decide to buy it? Like, how much author loyalty is there compared to genre loyalty?
I would say it's a mix. So I have contemporary romance is definitely my biggest readership, but I do have readers who will go anywhere for me or with me, which is fantastic, but it's not by any means my entire readership. And then it's funny, I have some that will read, say, Keep Her Safe or He Will Be My Ruin, and they loved it, and they I want more thriller, I want more suspense and dark stuff. And I'm like, well, it's not paying the bills. So
when you were backwards and forwards between those genres, were you ever tempted to write under a different name? Because, you know, like you say, marketing person's worst nightmare. As authors, we're told to kind of brand ourselves, you know, you need to be like a Frederick Buckman, where all your books are in that same vein. And with you changing genres backwards and forwards, did you ever think, okay, well, some I'll do under Kathleen, some I'll do under KA, or no?
Well, you know what? It was never a conversation that we had. And in hindsight, when I go back and I look at, you know, look at my experience, I frankly should have stuck with contemporary romance, and I should have put out however many books. But at the same time, I think I probably would have been stifled, me as a kind of a creative person, because of who I am, and because I need to go with my gut, and I get an idea for a story, and sometimes I don't know how dark that story is going to be or how light that story is going to be until I've actually written it. In terms of writing under a different name, that was never really a conversation that came up with the publisher. And I think because they were trying to brand me K.A. Tucker and build that name, it's not something that they were pushing. I feel like a bit of my career might have been, this is just me kind of in a gut field, not anything that my publisher and I ever discussed, but I almost feel like I was a bit of an experiment, like to see, okay, we put her out, this is her style of writing, let her try this, let her try that, see what sticks kind of thing. I almost felt a little bit like that when I look back at it now.
And I feel like as writers, we are a bit like actors in some way. I mean, you'll see somebody like Viola Davis. She will do sort of two blockbusters to make the money from them, and then she'll do some small kind of artsy film for her. For you as a writer, you knew where your bread and butter was, where the money was coming in, but you wanted to also, for your own sanity, for your own creative life, you wanted to explore other genres, which I think is wonderful that you got to do that. Like, I think of somebody like John Grisham, who wrote all of these courtroom dramas, and then he wrote A Painted House, and mm-hmm. people came to it and they were like, what the hell, man? This is a house in the middle of nowhere and there's no lawyers in sight. What the hell are you doing? And I feel like after that, he wasn't able to be experimental again unless he published under a different name, and we're not aware of that. So after all of these, how did you come back from traditional publishing to self-publishing?
Well, so at the end of my last contract, my publisher and I parted ways. At that point, I had published 14 books with them. And I think at that point, both sides felt like we had worked together as far as we were going to work together. And then at that point, I was going to be publishing Wild at Heart. And I knew that I was going to be publishing that. And I frankly did not want to give that to anybody. And I knew that I didn't need to give that to anybody because I've written 14 books, well, more, but at that point, 14 with a publisher, and I had already built a bit of an audience. And so people knew my name. There was some name recognition. I'm able to reach my readers through my website, the ones who are loyal and following me. I knew that I could, and because this is a sequel to a book that had done quite well, The Simple Wild is doing very well now, I should say, or steadily climbing. When I released it in 2000, I want to say when we released it in 2018, it was a very quiet, soft release. I mean, there was really nothing. It was in August. It was like the basics, you know, when the publisher basics, like the, okay, we'll give you a blog tour and we'll do a cover reveal and, you know, a couple of things here and there, get some reviews and arcs and stuff. Like, that's kind of like the basic package for publishing. And that's basically what I had. Mind you, I will say the Canadian team was fantastic in the sense that they got me on, on television for a news morning show. But again, that was one touch point. You know, you need so many touch points in order for a book to gain any traction. One show is not going to do it. One review from, you know, a newspaper is not going to do it. So you need a big bucket of stuff. Anyway, so it was very quiet. But what, in 2 years later, it had gained momentum 100% because of the readers, because of bloggers and readers reading and reviewing and passing on to their friends and their family. And so at that point, I knew that I would be able to deliver a book that people would want, and I wouldn't need to do it with the help of a publisher.
Yeah, you can never underestimate the power of a passionate reader who has loved a book and who wants to scream from the rooftops how amazing it is and wants to put it in other people's hands. And I follow you on Instagram, and you have an extremely loyal following. There are so many bookstagrammers who post covers of your books, who post reviews, and that's how I would have gotten to know you if I hadn't met you. Purely would have been on Bookstagram, because romance isn't a genre that I generally read. Yeah, you're extremely, extremely well known there, and your fans are wonderfully loyal. Okay, so then you decided to follow it up with a sequel, and that you then self-published, and that did phenomenally well.
Yes, Wild at Heart did well. And then then the pandemic hit, and everything was weird. And then at that point, I mean, when I left my publisher, when I left Atria, I'd been with them for 6 years. I think it was about that, in 14 books and however many contracts. And it felt a little bit like a divorce, to be honest. And so there were a couple editors who were asking about me and contacting my agent and interested in a romance. But at that point, I was very much in a position where I did not want to jump back into another relationship. That's, you know, that's really what it is. And kind of almost like another marriage, because you're signing a contract. So at that point, I just decided, you know what, I'm, and that's where I'm at now, where I thought, you know what, I'm just gonna kind of enjoy this a little bit in terms of having some flexibility. I learned some things about myself, one being that while I can write to a deadline, I don't want to. So, and I don't want to do it for 14 books or however many books.
14 books in 6 years. That's crazy. How many books were you having to turn in every single year?
So when I was writing 10 Tiny Breaths and Burying Water, I think I was at 3 books a year. So that was extremely stressful. That I agreed to it. So, you know, I agreed to it. And it part of it was because of the market, because of the romance, and everybody was just hungry. The readers are very hungry. So if I wanted to keep up the pace with what was happening in the market at that point, I couldn't be releasing one book a year. Not like that, but those books were a little bit easier to write than some of my later ones, like The Simple Wild and You Keep Her Safe, that took like over a year for me to write. Also, frankly, I agreed to it because I was leaving a lucrative career and I needed to kind of make it make sense in terms of I needed to balance that out financially. So, yeah, but I mean, they would have been, Atria would have been fine if I had to say, you know what, slow down, I cannot do this. And it did get to that point where both of us were like, we cannot be publishing this many books. This doesn't make sense. And so we did slow down to 2 books a year. And then we were doing 1 book a year near the end.
We just registered my youngest kid for kindergarten. I cannot believe it. One of the tricky things about my kids being in French immersion school and not having French as a language myself is I'm honestly worried about how I'm going to assist with homework as they get bigger. They're young now, but I see it coming. We are honestly so lucky, though, to live in a city that's bilingual, and we have bilingual friends and Francophone friends. So I know it's going to be easy for our kids to pick it up. Me, on the other hand, I am worried about me. I grew up somewhere where French class was not taken seriously, and now I have to make up the difference. And that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. As the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, it really immerses you in the language you want to learn. Rosetta Stone teaches through immersion, which is a proven way to learn a language. Instead of memorizing and drilling vocabulary words, you learn by matching audio from native speakers to visuals, reading stories, participating in dialogues, and other practical language skills to fast track your ability to communicate fluently. There are no English translations in the product. You're honestly getting trained to listen, speak, read, write, and think in your new language, which is what everybody wants. Rosetta Stone users especially love the speech recognition feature. As you practice speaking, Rosetta Stone uses advanced voice recognition technology to match your audio, the audio from native speakers, and then give you feedback on how well you're pronunciating the words so you can really hone those pronunciations. It offers 25 languages from Spanish, French, Italian, German, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, even Dutch, Arabic, and Polish. This is the best language program because they have been an expert in the language learning field for 30 years and used by millions. Thousands of companies and government organizations use Rosetta Stone to support language training online. Of all the apps, Rosetta Stone uses the best speech recognition technology, so it compares your sound waves to those of a native speaker for better feedback to improve. They have a patented speech recognition engine called True Accent, which is built into the program. As you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronunciating words. The other language learning apps use speech recognition to detect what you said, but Rosetta Stone tells you how well you said it compared to native speakers. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Think about the cost of a 1-month language course. Think about the cost of 1-hour private tutoring sessions. With Rosetta Stone, you enjoy lifetime membership and accessibility on desktop or app. We have a special offer for you guys. That's 50% off. That's a lifetime access to 25 language courses on Rosetta Stone for 50% off. This is a steal. Do not put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Shit No One Tells You About Writing listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. We want you guys to go visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Are you looking for beta readers, some of whom might potentially become writing group members down the line? Are you wanting to be matched up with those writing in a similar genre or time zone so they can critique your work as you critique theirs at the same time? Your manuscript doesn't have to be complete to sign up for this 3,000-word evaluation. This particular matchup will be open to registrations from now until the 2nd of June, with the matchup emails going out on the 3rd of June. For more information and to register, go to biancamaray.com, look for the beta reader matchup page, and please spread the word. The more writers we have signed up, the better the matches will be. I think that's usual for the romance industry. I know people who write for Harlequin who, you know, have to turn around sort of three books a year as well, which is, I mean, that's a book every 4 months. I take about 2 years per book. I could never write in the romance genre. I would just be way, way too slow. Okay, so having experienced traditional publishing, having experienced self-publishing, what are the pros and cons of each? Let's look at traditional publishing. What are the pros of that?
So I would say for me, one was the strengthening my craft because I was working with such an incredible editor. So having an editor, a content editor, acquisitions editor, I'm not talking about someone to cross your, you know, T's and dot your I's and do all the grammatical little things, which is also very valuable to go through that process when you do get there, right? Anytime I get my manuscripts that have been copy edited, I go through everything. I don't ever just, you know, accept or set things. I try and evaluate and learn from everything. But that being said, that aside, working with high caliber editor for that many books, and I had one editor for most of that, almost all of them, that was fantastic. I learned so much from her. So that in that sense, I would say that's a huge plus. When you're self-publishing, unless you have a lot of money, basically to say, you know what, I'm going to spend thousands of dollars on an editor and I'm going to pay for a content editor. Most people aren't doing that. So when you're traditionally publishing, you get that kind of as the package.
Right. And you get what? You get your editor who you work with, you get a copy editor who's checking for consistency, who's checking for mistakes, and then you get a proofreading yes. editor who yes. looks for, you know, misplaced commas or et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, yeah, it's like that. If you were paying for that for yourself, that's three different editors you'd have to pay for.
Yeah. And I mean, I've heard the arguments from typically there are people who haven't gone through traditional publishing. They haven't balanced both sides. And, you know, they think, okay, well, I'm just going to pay for an editor and whoopee-doo, that's great. No, I mean, I've been on both sides. And frankly, I have a great an editor that I go through my self-published work. She's fantastic as well. Brilliant. And I keep going back to her because she's brilliant, but she's doing mainly copy editing. I'm not getting that content editing from her. So it makes a difference. So I would say there's that. And then I would say really it's reaching booksellers, reaching libraries. Those are key players in the industry and they're invaluable. I don't know how many times I'll get a message from somebody saying that they were passed my name or my book by a bookseller or a librarian, and then they fall in love and are now reading all of my books. So those people are true champions, and to be able to tap into that segment and those people is critical. For me, I would say kind of those are the big buckets. There's obviously also the expertise. If you don't have the expertise, or if you don't have the skill set to figure things out, like figure out publishing and publicity and social media and et cetera, then having a publisher does help. But if you're someone who can figure that kind of stuff out, which I think, frankly, a lot of people in today's world have to be, then, you know, you can figure it out. So put it that way. So that's traditional publishing in terms of self-publishing. So I would say, I mean, first and foremost is control. That's not foremost, but first is control. You know, you control everything and you make all the choices. Now, if you're a person who has struggles with making choices, that might not be ideal. but if you're someone who can make the tough calls and can look at something and learn your market and understand what cover might work and whatnot, and find the right cover designer for you, then you can do it all and you can make those decisions.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you said find the right cover designer, because the problem with many indie authors that I've seen is they seem to think that they can design their own covers themselves. And so the cover ends up looking like something you designed yourself, and which is great if you're a graphic designer or someone who's really good at this kind of thing. But I feel like as indie authors, we should be reaching out to people who have got expertise in certain areas. And your covers are always so, so stunning. So you've clearly done your research and found somebody who, you know, gets you and gets your work.
Yes, I have a fantastic. Her name is Hong Lee, and she is fantastic. I've been working with her since I don't even know how long, years now. And she's great. And I, you know, with Simple Wild, I basically handed her that cover and I said, I'm writing a sequel. You need to make it flow with this. and I didn't need to tell her exactly what, you know, I might've thrown some ideas and this and that. But the thing is with her, there was already a concept there. So she just had to match it. But she's also excellent with coming up with a new concept. So for me personally, if I'm hiring a talented cover artist, I can tell them what the genre is, what the look and feel is, you know, maybe a couple ideas, and which is what I would do a lot of the time with Atria. So Atria was very good about with covers with us in that we always work together with covers. I know there's horror stories about traditional publishers who they just say, here's your cover and you're going with it because this is what our test markets say, or this is what we think will sell. Atria was never like that. We always worked back and forth, and most of the time they nailed it on the first time. There were a couple times where they would send me a cover and it just did not work, or I'd look at it and then I'd line it up with all of my covers, which are frankly are quite branded, and say, you know, one of these doesn't belong. So they would always come back with another cover. So they worked really, really well, but you don't necessarily always have that.
And Instagram, well, Bookstagram especially, is so visual. Bookstagrammers love taking beautiful pictures of books, and they spend hours setting these books up. And like with your books, they'll use props from the books, and they will use boots, and they will use hats, and they will use flannel shirts and all kinds of things that go along with the theme of the book to make that picture beautiful. So they want the book cover to be beautiful as well. And that's something you provide them with.
It's incredible. I'm, you know, a lot of the time I will share these pictures and these edits because they're stunning, and because they put so much work into them, and I cannot do anything close to that. So of course I'm going to share, you know, and I get a lot of bloggers coming back saying, thank you for sharing. And I'm like, no, you're doing me a huge favor here, because like, this is just gorgeous what they come up with. So
yeah, they creating content. Okay. So besides control, what else would you say the pros of self-publishing are?
So I would say financially, it's much more lucrative. And when I say that, the caveat is I'm talking about romance. So, and I'm talking about having a bit of, I can't speak to what it would be like as a completely new author coming out, because even when I was that new author coming out, it was a very different world than what it is now. But in terms of just looking at percentages, and, you know, if you sell 1,000 copies traditionally published versus 1,000 copies self-published, it's much more lucrative to be self-publishing. And then again, in romance, where I'm not sure what the split is right now, but I want to say the last I heard was at least 50% ebook, possibly more, you know, of where the market split is of ebook readers versus print. Again, there's a huge profitable position to be in if you're indie publishing there.
I'm just trying to think. I think most traditionally published authors, I think if a paperback sells for its full price in a bookstore, I think a author will get $1.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Whereas, I mean, if you're indie publishing, even paperback indie publishing, you're going to make significantly more on a per book paperback. So, I mean, financially, there are benefits. Other things that I'm actually only learning now is with marketing, you know, especially if you're with Amazon and you're self-publishing, you can tap into their advertising platform that they have. And I mean, that's a beast all on its own. And I did a couple courses on it to try and learn how to do it. But if you're traditionally published, you can't run those types of ads. And as much as we might not enjoy saying this, Amazon is extremely powerful, and they are important if you are an author. You know, I do whatever I can to support indie bookstores and do whatever I can to support Chapters and Indigo. I'm always pushing Canadians to go there, even though, frankly, it's not as lucrative for me for someone to purchase at Indigo as it is to purchase at Amazon, but I would prefer to support Indigo, frankly, or an indie bookstore, a Canadian indie bookstore. But they're a big platform. You can't just ignore them as much as some people would like to.
At the end of the day, this is our career. It's our livelihood. And sometimes you don't always have the luxury of saying, well, I'm cutting off a whole segment of my income. What else besides financial would you say?
Well, so there's the control, there's the flexibility. For me right now, I'm really feeling the creative freedom. And again, I never had any difficulties with my editor. I've heard horror stories about people who would write a book and then submit it, and then the publisher would come back saying, you need to change all of these things. Obviously, they're doing it with the intention of making the book stronger and better. So I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's a hard thing probably to deal with for anyone. I never really had that. I had a strange working relationship with my editor in the sense that I had always, because I sold books that were not written, I would be writing them as we were working and I'd have a deadline and I'd hit this percent at this wall at about 50 or 60% where I'd be like, I cannot go any further until I have my editor's buy-in, which is it was tough. And it took me quite a few books to realize that it's because I was no longer writing that book just for me. And I was writing it for me and someone else, and really for someone else to have to approve. And that's a mental game for me. And so I'm finding now, especially, I am loving being able to just write my book however I want it without that mental block that I have to get someone's approval. And at the end of it, I get to publish what I want, 100% what I want. The story is going to go how I want, and I don't need any approval. Now, I'm saying all that and not in a negative sense, because I do believe that editors are key. And if you have a good editor, man, you're in a good place. And I was fortunate to have a good editor for many years and I learned a ton. And so I'm in a position now where I think I can analyze my stories and my content in a way that I would not have been able to 6 years ago or 7 or 8 years ago.
Right. Especially when you're kind of just starting out, when you're a beginner writer, I feel like you don't have the discernment. I think that once you've published a few books, written a few books, you start to develop a kind of instinctive understanding of how story works, what's going to work, what's not going to work. But I think that that comes with the help of the editor, definitely. And something else is that I feel that as writers these days, we are having to market our own work so much, even publishing traditionally. Even if your publisher sends you on a book tour, you are still having to be on social media. You are having to constantly be hustling. You're having to be getting events. You're having to be speaking to book clubs, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, people seem to think if you're traditionally published, the publisher does everything for you. They get you in magazines and you sit back and count your money, which is definitely not the case. No, and, no. And, you know, as authors, I spend about 4 nights a week chatting to book clubs. And these are things that I set up myself. It's not things that are set up by my publisher. So it's a lot of work. And at least when you're publishing for yourself, you feel like the payoff is there, you know, so much more in terms of money, et cetera, as well. As we finish up, Kathleen, what advice do you have for authors who are trying to break in, who are thinking about self-publishing their work? I've had tons of people reach out to me who wanting to publish fantasy, they wanting to publish romance, they YA all over the place.
So, well, that's a really big question, I would say. I know it sounds pretty simple, but it's a big question. One thing I've learned just through over the years is that different things make different people tick in the publishing world. There are people who are just in it financially for the finances, right? And I see that quite a bit. Some people might laugh at that, but if you're a romance writer and you're an indie writer, you can be in it for the finances and be doing quite well. So, you know, there are some people that are like that. There's other people who their goal is to hit the New York Times. That's all they want to do. There are some people who their goal is they want to be traditionally published. That is their kind of bucket list. That's their checklist. That's what's going to make them feel successful. So one thing I would say is maybe to step back and understand, I'll say this, it's tough to do this if you're starting out because your target's going to change as you move forward, as you're writing as well, but trying to get a handle of what your goals are, what your short-term goals are, what your long-term goals are, what your dreams versus goals are, because you can have dreams and you can have goals that you're working towards. That's kind of the overall, doesn't matter what genre you're writing in, but I would say understand the genre that you're writing in. If you're writing romance, you have a lot more flexibility, I would say, with choosing between traditionally publishing and self-publishing. If you are writing something that is very targeted or you're writing, you know, even women's fiction, which is to me still quite commercial and quite popular now more than anything, if you're writing, you know, thriller, if you're writing suspense, I would say you're going to have a much harder time breaking into the market. So maybe traditionally publishing is the avenue for you. But my feeling has always been, and that's the position where I started, is I have a book. I want people to read it. I don't need to be traditionally published. I just want people to read it. And so then I pursue that through self-publishing. But just know what's going to feel like failure versus success to you. Maybe write it down and remember that, because there's going to be ups and downs. I have ups and downs. You sit here and you say all these wonderful, wonderful things about me, but I've had some serious downs over the last couple of years and points where I was thinking, you know what, I don't know if I should be doing this. Maybe this career isn't for me. So everyone goes through those dips, those valleys and those highs and those lows.
And even when you're feeling very successful, the goalposts shift all the time.
Yeah.
You'll say, oh, if this happens, I will feel super successful. And then the goalpost shifts all the time. So I think writing it down and keeping an eye on that is super important.
Yeah. Being aware, because man, some days and sometimes this business can be tough. Keep in mind that you're not just a writer, you are a business owner. So whether you're going to be traditionally published or self-published, you are going to be your own marketing person. You're going to be your own kind of business manager because you're going to be working with a publisher. You're going to be your own writer. You're going to be writing. You're going to be probably doing your own accounting unless you can afford someone to go through all your receipts, which I mean, I still go through all my receipts and that could be a control thing. But anyway, yeah. So I would say just keep that in mind that no one's just a writer. So you're doing a lot of stuff. I'm not saying this in the sense of deterring anyone, because I actually like the balance of everything.
You spent some time just a short while ago learning Amazon marketing and all these things, and you'd self-published, and yet here you were learning how to do this because it was an important part of your business.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Kathleen, for taking the time. I know you're trying to finish a book and you've got so much happening, but I really, really appreciate this. I know that people are going to find it really, really interesting and helpful. And that's it for today's episode. If you have any questions about writing or publishing, please email me at theshitaboutwriting@gmail.com and I'll do my best to get them answered for you. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes.
Here's the thing. Ever wonder why aspiring authors spend so much time trying to crack the code about how to get published? That's because no one who's in the daily grind like me has put all the pieces together in one place. It's Carly Waters here, and as your senior literary agent on the podcast with 15 years of experience in publishing, selling books, and teaching the business of publishing, I'm here to give you the clarity that will turn this hobby into a career. Inside my course, The Author's Publishing Playbook, we have monthly live Q&A sessions to cover your specific issues, but for the rest, there are over 40 video lessons that equal 10 hours of learning with professionally edited transcripts. The course will solve all your writerly problems, except write your book for you. That's on you. My course is a masterclass designed to teach writers how to prepare, pitch, publish, and promote their book in today's competitive publishing landscape. It's for career-driven writers, aspiring and published, who want to understand how to succeed in the business of books. There are over 20 worksheets, downloads, and plug-and-play templates for editing, querying, and marketing. You get lifetime access for the entire 6-module course as soon as you purchase. As new content gets added, you have access to that as well. Don't forget, there's a mobile app on top of computer access you can learn on the go. Get started today to gain the career you've only dreamed about. And you guys get a discount. So at checkout, carlywaters.com/course, use code POD15, that's code POD15, when you check out for 15% off. That's carlywaters.com/course. Use code POD15. That's code POD15 when you check out for 15% off. See you inside the course.
Hi, everyone. This is Cece. If you're a fan of books with hooks, then you've probably heard me use the term interiority. I often catch myself saying things like, these pages need more interiority, or the interiority here needs work. And that's because interiority is a super important element of storytelling. It's what makes books unique. But as it turns out, a lot of you have questions about what exactly is interiority and how to properly weave it into stories, which is why I'm teaching my popular Writing Interiority class in a new 2-day format. We'll meet on Thursday, June 6th at 8 p.m. via Zoom to cover all things interiority, including the difference between interiority and emotions, how interiority is different from telling, how to leverage interiority into plot points, how to strike a balance between interiority and mystery, and more. And then we'll meet again for a live cozy Q&A session on Monday, June 10th, also at 8 p.m. via Zoom, in which you'll have the opportunity to turn your camera on if you choose. If you're interested, check out the link in my bio on Instagram, and I hope to see you there.
Here's the thing. Ever wonder why aspiring authors spend so much time trying to crack the code about how to get published? That's because no one who's in the daily grind like me has put all the pieces together in one place. It's Carly Waters here, and as your senior literary agent on the podcast with 15 years of experience in publishing, selling books, and teaching the business of publishing, I'm here to give you the clarity that will turn this hobby into a career. Inside my course, The Author's Publishing Playbook, we have monthly live Q&A sessions to cover your specific issues, but for the rest, there are over 40 video lessons that equal 10 hours of learning with professionally edited transcripts. The course will solve all your writerly problems, except write your book for you. That's on you. My course is a masterclass designed to teach writers how to prepare, pitch, publish, and promote their book in today's competitive publishing landscape. It's for career-driven writers, aspiring and published, who want to understand how to succeed in the business of books. There are over 20 worksheets, downloads, and plug-and-play templates for editing, querying, and marketing. You get lifetime access for the entire 6-module course as soon as you purchase. As new content gets added, you have access to that as well. Don't forget, there's a mobile app on top of computer access you can learn on the go. Get started today to gain the career you've only dreamed about. And you guys get a discount. So at checkout, carlywaters.com/course, use code POD15, that's code POD15 when you check out for 15% off. That's carlywaters.com/course. Use code POD15. That's code POD15 when you check out for 15% off. See you inside the course.
Hi, everyone. This is CC. If you're a fan of books with hooks, then you've probably heard me use the term interiority. I often catch myself saying things like, these pages need more interiority, or the interiority here needs work. And that's because interiority is a super important element of storytelling. It's what makes books unique. But as it turns out, a lot of you have questions about what exactly is interiority and how to properly weave it into stories, which is why I'm teaching my popular Writing Interiority class in a new 2-day format. We'll meet on Thursday, June 6th at 8 p.m. via Zoom to cover all things interiority, including the difference between interiority and emotions, how interiority is different from telling, how to leverage interiority into plot points, how to strike a balance between interiority and mystery, and more. And then we'll meet again for a live cozy Q&A session on Monday, June 10th, also at 8 p.m. via Zoom, in which you'll have the opportunity to turn your camera on if you choose. If you're interested, check out the link in my bio on Instagram, and I hope to see you there.